Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vanderkirk speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world with reports by shortwave direct from overseas. In Australia today, the aquiline-featured, fine-voiced General MacArthur gave interviewers a first glimpse of his future plans. First off, MacArthur said, of course, he must defend Australia. But Australia was to be used chiefly as a base, as a primary American base for future operations, which someday would proceed all the way north to Japan itself. General MacArthur remarked that on the president's orders he had left the Philippines, but that he had every expectation of going back to them. Meanwhile, on that equally, if not more important, Russian front, the Soviet offensive is again mounting in intensity, all the way from the slush-packed delta of the River Don up to the flint-like frozen fields round Leningrad. And now a word from Charles Lyon.
Is yours an Alka-Seltzer home? It ought to be, and I'll tell you why. Alka-Seltzer offers relief for so many different common ailments, it's a real economy, and no home should ever be without it. You take Alka-Seltzer for headaches, neuralgia, muscular aches and pains, and cold distress. And you'll enjoy the relief it offers for acid indigestion, heartburn, and upset stomach. Yes, where many different preparations were needed before, you can economize by keeping on hand only one, Alka-Seltzer. And remember, for further economy, it's wise to get the larger sized package because it contains three times the number of Alka-Seltzer tablets as the smaller size at only twice the price. Ask your druggist about Alka-Seltzer and see what he says. And now, the news of the world.
Our first report, direct from Moscow, Russia, will come to us via the newsroom in San Francisco.
Robert Naginov speaking from Moscow. A few minutes ago, on my way to the studio, I learned that the Russians and the Japanese have today extended the fisheries agreement for 1942. The negotiations and the signature took place in Pribyshev. The first Vice Commissar for Foreign Affairs, Mr. Vyshinsky, signed for the Russians, and the Japanese Ambassador Tatakawa signed for his country. There are no important changes in the conditions under which the Japanese have leased the fisheries from the Russians, save some financial adjustments in their favor. The new British ambassador is Sir Archibald Clark Carr, and the United States Charge d'Affaires, Mr. Walter Thurston, arrived in Moscow today. With Pribyshev still the diplomatic capital of the Soviet Union, this arrival has caused a minor sensation here. In Moscow, it is already the 21st of March, the first calendar day of spring, but there is as yet no sign of a German spring offensive, and there will be none if we take the Russians' word for it. Analyzing Hitler's chances for a spring blitz, the Red Star today unequivocally declared, quote, "During this spring, just as during the winter, we and now the Germans will be on the offensive." Analyzing the pros and cons, the Red Army said that the main reason for Hitler's inability to blitz the Russians this coming spring and arrest the initiative from the Red Army is that it is beyond his power to develop a crushing offensive all along the gigantic front. The Red Army, continues the article, has succeeded in blasting the German defense lines on all the important sectors, playing havoc with their thoroughly thought-out arrangement for unity and coordination of action. Broadcasting directly from the battlefield, Colonel General Yeremenko of the Kalinin Front said that in recent action, a Red Army formation killed the 17,000 Germans and liberated 2,500 villages. Good night from Moscow.
That was Robert Magadoff reporting from Moscow, Russia. And now we will attempt to establish contact with New Delhi, India, to bring you a special report from this increasingly important sector. Go ahead, New Delhi. Go ahead, New Delhi, India. We regret we're unable to establish contact with New Delhi, so next we'll go to the Southwest Pacific and our reporter in Melbourne, Australia.
I'm sorry.
This is Martin Agronsky calling from Melbourne. I've just come from the railway station at Melbourne, where with about half the rest of the population of this city, I've been waiting for MacArthur. The train was late, and so I can't describe to you the kind of reception General MacArthur is probably receiving this minute. I can give you some idea of it by telling you it took me 15 minutes to fight my way back here through the crowd waiting to see him. And I had to force my taxi to go three blocks around to get past the men, women, and children of Melbourne jamming the streets all around the station. On the station platform itself, our army had turned out a beautifully spick-and-span guard of honor with immaculate canvas leggings, shoes so shiny you could see your face in them, rifle parts glinting in the beautiful Australian sunshine, and as well set up a group of American youngsters as you'd want to see anywhere. Stuck between two squads of our six-footers were seven tiny, swarthy Filipinos in white sun helmets and white canvas leggings who stood stiff as ramrods, making up in soldierly bearing what they lacked in height. The Filipino lieutenant in command told me he and all his men had been wounded in the first engagement against the Japs. I asked him what he thought of MacArthur. His face lit up, his eyes sparkled, and he said he's a great general. A six-foot American corporal on the other side of the seven little Filipinos had another way of saying how our troops feel about the man who's to command them here. According to the corporal, brother, MacArthur's a comp. Donald Blow, Waterloo, Iowa, was probably the plainest man on the platform. He's to be the general's permanent driver. Donald, who's 6'3" with black eyes and black hair and used to drive for a meat market at home, was so spick and span he's shown all over.
That was Melbourne, Australia. Back now to John W. Vandercook in New York.
And now across our other and eastern boundary ocean to London, England, for the report of Robert St. John.
This is London. The British, in a broadcast to Europe an hour ago, announced a new scheme to get news over to the people of the continent. Lately, the Nazis have been jamming the broadcasts from London. Now, it's easy to jam the sound of a voice, difficult to jam Morse code. So news bulletins will be sent out in Morse code from now on, in German, French, and English. People of Europe are urged to begin studying up on their dots and dashes. The broadcasts will be done slowly, so that even amateurs can follow them. There's an article in a weekly paper here about the most idle men in Britain. Hundreds of young Americans who last year answered ads put in American papers by the British government. Ads calling for volunteers with radio training for a civilian technical corps to help bring down Nazi planes by radio location. The boys have been in camp over here for months. The paper's representative says he found in that camp the wickedest waste of manpower England has ever known. For example, a skilled chemist has been given the duties of a messenger boy. Others are completely idle. The paper suggests that the hundreds who are eager to return to America and join our army be allowed to go, and that the rest be given jobs befitting their skill. I've talked to some of those American boys myself. They told me exactly the same story. And now this is Robert St. John in London, returning you to New York.
A report from Ankara, Turkey tonight reveals that slightly satanic figure, Franz von Papen, is now on his way for another conference with Adolf Hitler, which will take place at his headquarters somewhere along the Russian front. That retired German spy, who was once so very busy and so ineffectively busy in this country, and rose to the diplomatic top in Germany in spite of many stumbling mistakes, is described as in very poor health. The Führer's ambassador in ever nervous but still neutral Turkey is still suffering from a disturbance to his ears, which was caused by the explosion of that bomb which went off very near him on the Ankara Boulevard 3 weeks ago. But Franz von Papen is going to see Hitler anyway. And when anyone, and especially Herr von Papen, moves in that corner of the world, the earth trembles. Though Turkey's neutrality, as a matter of exact fact, is probably in no more immediate danger just now than it has been for some time past. And now, for the news at home, we turn to Washington. And to Raymond Brandt.
In proclaiming April 6 as Army Day, President Roosevelt said today, quote, "We are engaged in our greatest war, a war that will leave none of our lives wholly untouched." Earlier at his news conference, the president expressed grave fear that there will be shortages of labor next fall. In the meantime, however, men from 45 to 65 will have registered, thereby building up a great mass of information about skilled workers who could be shifted to defense work. The president will not disclose how he intends to use these older men. He says industries are getting enough workers at present to carry on, and that when the shortages develop, the main problem will be to get the needed men. He says that new or old methods may be used to solve this problem. The president, by the way, will register on April 27th, although he's commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He chuckled as he said that he was willing to take on another job. Secretary of Labor Perkins says by next January, women will constitute one-third of the 15 million war workers needed at that time. She reports that women excel at painstaking jobs requiring patience, dexterity, and stick-to-itiveness. Surveys by her department show that at least one-third of the jobs in aircraft assembly factories can be done successfully by women. The president is appalled at the extent of industrial accidents, which cost 460 million man-days last year, 5% over 1940. These accidents kill 11 persons and permanently disable 40 every hour, and disable, temporarily, one of every 14 workers each year. He says people should think about these serious figures. As a sidelight on the controversy in Congress over restrictive wartime labor legislation, the president notes that in most defense industries, those not on a four-shift basis, the average man is working more than 45 hours a week. In one machine tool plant, the workers are putting in 77 hours a week, which the president thinks, from a human point of view, is too high. President William Green of the AFL charges that an organized propaganda drive is responsible for the great batches of mail and telegram demanding that Congress outlaw overtime pay for work in excess of 40 hours and legislate against the closed shop. He says the movement started in Oklahoma. He wants a congressional investigation to find out who is behind it. That's all from Washington at this time.
We'll hear some more late news from John W. Vandercook in just a moment. Well, tomorrow brings us the first official day of spring. But wait, don't be too anxious to shed that warm clothing, and don't let a little bright, warm day now and then fool you. Spring is a great season for cold, so look out. And if you do catch cold, remember these Alka-Seltzer ABCs. A, Alka-Seltzer. Take it for relief of the misery and the aching, feverish feeling a cold causes. B, be careful. Get more rest than usual, stay out of chilling drafts, get plenty of vitamins every day. And C, comfort the sore throat if it's raw and raspy from your cold by gargling with Alka-Seltzer. These are Alka-Seltzer's ABCs for cold distress, so remember them. Now, back to the newsroom.
Berlin. Only last autumn, on the crest of the Nazi victories in Russia, some Germans in authority were thinking of calling the whole thing off and of seeking a negotiated peace. That surprising statement was actually written today by Joseph Goebbels himself, who added that those who shared that view were then quite willing to leave some questions unsettled, just for the sake of quitting. But now Dr. Goebbels said all Germans agree that the war must be fought out to its last conclusion. The tone of Dr. Goebbels' article was not entirely cheerful. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye until this same time on Monday from the newsroom in New York.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.